Tom Petty and Wildflowers, and before that, John Prine, and Hello in There for Alan and all John Prine fans everywhere. 14 minutes past eight, the Full English Breakfast Show. It's time for what has become the highlight of Wednesday morning over the last few weeks. Here is Mark Dazzani with part three of his Coronavirus UK diary.
Never has the idiom, a week is a long time in politics, ever been more appropriate than since it was first uttered by the Labour Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, in 1964. As the UK wakes up to its 16th interminable day in lockdown, and we struggle to remember what day of the week it is, Prime Minister Boris Johnson remains in intensive care, fighting the invisible enemy that has brought this normally vigorous nation and much of the rest of the world to a crawl. This time last week, Boris was self-isolating in his Downing Street apartment and running the country by Zoom video conference. As he scanned the Wednesday morning papers, he would have been shaken to the core by the criticism of the way his government had been mismanaging the coronavirus crisis. Even the usually suppliant Daily Mail screamed in 10-inch headline, "Fix testing fiasco now!" As if the message wasn't clear enough, the "now" was underlined. The responsibility and stress of running a country is something that Johnson has long dreamed of, but the COVID-19 curveball was one major undertaking that he couldn't see coming. It had just struck the government mid-wicket, bowling his administration into disarray. His dream was fast turning into a nightmare. Just over 3 months after winning an 80-seat majority in the general election, it looked as if the crisis could deal the government a knockout blow. Johnson is a heavyweight political brawler, though, and he thrives on fightbacks. After weeks of dithering that made his 2016 pre-referendum deliberations, over which side of the Brexit fence to jump, look positively decisive, he determined to get a grip and lift his government off the floor for another round. Johnson was dazed from his illness, though. He looked phased and peaky on his video Twitter posts and was visibly struggling as he applauded NHS workers on the doorstep of Number 10 last Thursday night. As he stumbled back indoors, he looked punch drunk. Come Friday, he announced that he had to extend his period of self-isolation as his mild COVID-19 symptoms were persisting. In contrast, Health Secretary Matt Hancock emerged from his illness like Tigger on steroids. With boundless energy, he bounced from serial TV interviews to the daily press briefing to officially opening London's 4,000-bed Nightingale Hospital. Hancock had come down with COVID-19 on the back foot over shortages of personal protection equipment for the frontline health workers, and his testing policy was also found seriously wanting. On his return, he hit the ground running. It was as if, in the delirium of fever, he had had a Road to Damascus revelation. Having been criticised for his over-optimistic predictions, and around the same time that the tragic deaths of frontline NHS workers were announced, Hancock promised to hit the 100,000 tests a day target by the end of April. With no vaccination on the horizon, testing seems like the only way to unlock us from an extended lockdown. Already reeling from the accelerating death rate, we mourn the loss of two nurses, Arima Nazreen and Amy O'Rourke, both healthy young mothers with three children each, the victims of viral overload caused by consistent exposure to the virus through their selfless devotion to their vocation. The news of more victims from the front line followed, and no doubt, tragically, there'll be more to come. The weekend saw the election of a new, potentially electable Labour leader, Keir Starmer. Jeremy Corbyn returned to the backbenches with the solace of feeling vindicated by Britain's biggest emergency since World War II, bringing the country to its economic knees. Starmer pledged support for the government in its battle against the coronavirus, whilst reserving the right to constructively criticise. Sunday saw some respite for the embattled but fighting back government. With Boris still ostensibly in charge and now bedbound behind his laptop, we enjoyed a sunny weekend with relative restraint, resisting the temptation to enjoy the great outdoors too much and to stay at home and save lives. The police, invested with new powers to move along anyone who was too static in the sunshine, also acted with cajoling constraint. North of the border, Scotland's chief medical officer, Catherine Calderwood, resigned, having been outed by the Scottish Sun on Sunday newspaper for not following her own less than earnest advice to stay put. It was revealed she had travelled to her holiday home in Fife, not once, but twice. The usually resolute Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, was caught equivocating before eventually bowing to the inevitable and accepting Calderwood's resignation. Also on Sunday, the nation looked forward to a motivating speech from Her Majesty the Queen, just the fifth occasion in peacetime that she would elucidate on TV outside of the Christmas Day schedule. Her message evoked the unified purpose of a besieged Britain during the World War II years of her childhood. Her message hit home. Just half an hour prior to the 8 p.m. broadcast, the Prime Minister, whose condition had deteriorated, was rushed to a waiting bed in St. Thomas's Hospital. The news was withheld until 9 p.m. so as not to diminish the impact of the Queen's historic broadcast. Allies and opponents took stock and wished Boris Johnson a speedy recovery. Just under 24 hours later, the country was shocked again. It was announced on Monday night that Boris Johnson had been moved to an intensive care unit as a precautionary measure. On hearing the news, a stunned nation paused and took a deep breath. Such is the viciousness of this new virus that despite reassurances that he would pull through, the British people hoped for the best but feared the worst. Boris conditionally handed over power to his three amigos, Cabinet Minister Michael Gove, Chancellor Rishi Sunak and his deputy Dominic Raab. The vast majority of us are praying earnestly for Johnson's recovery. Yesterday, the UK experienced its highest daily number of recorded coronavirus deaths, 854, a figure beginning to approach the toll on the deadliest days so far in Italy and Spain. It's taken a global pandemic to unite this country after years of deep division. It has taken a killer blow to sober up a society that had become inebriated by the insouciance of mass easy consumerism. This crisis has reawakened real values. Surely life on this planet will never be the same once we emerge from this ordeal. Evoking the Blitz spirit, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II reassured us that emerge we will, and better days will come. We will meet again, she concluded, to which the nation collectively responded, don't know where, don't know when. This is Mark Dezani reporting from Lockdown Britain for 106.5 Riviera Radio.
Okay, here's this morning's short story written by a group of local writers led by Marcin Lake. This morning's is a rather dystopian tale. Let's hope this doesn't come true. The Roaring Twenties by Charlie Baddeley. Cheers, and here's hoping the 2030s bring better things than the 2020s did. It seems strange bringing in a new year with desalinated water instead of champagne. But of course, champagne and wine have not existed since 2022, when the last of the bees died following the network upgrade from 4G to 5G across Europe. Without the bees, the grape crops failed at the same time as all the other fresh produce. Civil unrest and a revolution swiftly followed. We didn't hang around long enough to discover the outcome. We've been living aboard this floating palace for the last 8 years, following the devastation brought about by coronavirus, which on its own managed to wipe out half the world's population, including the whole of China, No one would have dreamt of taking a cruise, and the big cruise ships simply sat rusting where they were moored. No one objected when we took possession of this one. We have aboard a very precious cargo and have been looking for somewhere to disembark it, but it isn't easy. The UK, well, it used to be the UK, now it's probably better known as just England and Wales, is underwater. This happened around 5 years ago, we think, when the last polar ice cap melted and the sea level rose 216 feet. Of course, the UK isn't the only country underwater. Much of North America's eastern seaboard disappeared at the same time, along with most of South America and large parts of Europe. Australia is out of the question. There isn't much left now that the average temperature is around 60 degrees Celsius all year round. Not much can survive in those temperatures, not even the fires. Now there's nothing left to burn. Africa had been an option, but the plague of locusts that started in 2019 hasn't left much food for anyone, and once all the wildlife had been eaten, the population starved to death. The Middle East has never been an option once Trump dropped the nuclear bomb in Iran. Pity he had a chance to do that before he drowned playing golf when Florida disappeared underwater. The devastation that followed swiftly wiped out most of the countries around. Iraq, Syria, Saudi Arabia, Libya, all swiftly fell once they started bombing each other in retaliation. North Korea was accidentally blown up by Kim Jong-un, and unfortunately he took South Korea and Japan with him. The parts of North America, Russia and Canada, which survived the Great Flood, are completely empty now. Nothing could survive once the temperatures dropped to minus 60, although we heard rumours that Putin is still riding shirtless around Russia. Fake news, I suspect. Too cold even for Putin. President Thunberg rules the Scandinavian countries, although most of the population has fled or committed suicide. We hear this because she insists on her daily rants being broadcast to the entire population by loudspeaker. It's compulsive listening. We couldn't subject our precious cargo to that. Ah, the lions are roaring. It's time we fed them, and the elephants, tigers and other miscellaneous creatures brought on board in twos back when we took over the ship. Maybe New Zealand would be an option. Well, there is a possibility it sank under the weight of lava when the 12 active volcanoes in the country, for some explicable reason, all erupted at once.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online, this is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Leiser has the top stories across the Riviera.
According to the latest figures released, 30,000 people are hospitalised in France due to COVID-19. 7,131 patients are currently in intensive care. 19,337 people also left the hospital cured. 7,091 deaths have been recorded in hospitals since the start of the epidemic in France and 3,237 in nursing homes, bringing the total number to 10,328 deaths in France since March the 1st. On the French Riviera and in the Paris region, several local councils have decided to make it compulsory to wear a mask in the street to combat the spread of the coronavirus. The mayors of these communes rely on several scientific opinions to justify their decisions, in particular that of the Academy of Medicine, which ruled on Friday that a general public mask should be made compulsory for outings during and after confinement. Meanwhile, the city of Vence in the Alpes-Maritimes has announced that wearing a mask could soon be compulsory, along with other towns in the Alpes-Maritimes region. In other news, the 180 inhabitants of the Île Levant, the naturist island located in the Var and cut off from the world, has reported that there are no cases of the coronavirus on the island. Since the beginning of confinement, those on the island have been deprived of maritime links with the continent. 100 people live all year round on the island. Others have a second home there and have come to spend the confinement period on the island with its advantages and disadvantages. Since March the 17th, with the announcement of confinement due to the COVID-19 epidemic, maritime links to Le Lavandou, the nearest coastal town, have been suspended. The I Love Nice structure, which usually stands on the Quai Rabaut-Capou, has been temporarily removed while it undergoes renovation work. Nice City Council has assured worried locals that the structure will be back for all to admire in about 3 weeks' time. Nearly 400,000 people have signed a petition urging French officials to let more doctors in France prescribe the anti-malaria drug chloroquine for coronavirus patients, as experts continue to disagree over its use. advocated by Dr. Didier Raoult, based in Marseille. Raoult has had notable success using chloroquine on patients with COVID-19 before their condition deteriorates to the point where intensive care is needed. He combines the drug with an antibiotic. The French government announced recently that the drug was being used for critical cases only. Those in favour of using the drug argued that the treatment was specified to be used at the start of a diagnosis for coronavirus and not in critical cases. According to French media, however, not yet confirmed by the Élysée, French President Emmanuel Macron is expected to speak to the nation this Thursday evening. An address to the people in which the President of the Republic is expected to announce the upcoming calendar of confinement and health developments in the country. Figures published have shown that the use of partial unemployment has been requested for 5.8 million employees in France, or one in four in the private sector. The cost is estimated at 19.6 billion in 3 months, according to France's Labour Minister Muriel Pénicaud. Pénicaud announced on Tuesday that France is the only country to be at this level of partial unemployment. The French government has published a new international travel certificate available in English and French, which anyone wishing to enter France must fill in. The British Embassy is keen to raise awareness of this document amongst UK nationals who reside in France or who may need to transit through France to get home. Cross-border businesses should also be aware. The British Embassy reminds British citizens that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office currently advises against all non-essential travel abroad. UK nationals who own second home in France should not be looking to travel to France, for example. For more information, go to the British Embassy's website. A small congregation of worshippers will hold a Good Friday service at Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris a year after it was devastated by fire, but attendance will be limited because of a lockdown during the coronavirus outbreak. Finally, a recent survey carried out has shown that during the confinement period, on average, the French go out twice a week. They are in general busy watching television, internet and being sportive, and do not in general feel depressed. The survey carried out by the Odoxa CGI focuses on the French during confinement. During this period of confinement, the French carry out on average 2 outings per week, with a small minority, 7%, going out every day. It's the 50 to 64-year-olds who tend to go out most often, and the size of the accommodation or access to a garden does not affect the number of outings. 79% of French go out above all to make basic purchases. To play sport or walk an animal, only 24%. For professional reasons, 16%. The main distraction during confinement is screens, watching television for 57% and surfing the internet for 44%. Note that the over 65s surf as much as the under 25s. Among the three main hobbies, 38% of French respondents also cited exchanges with their loved ones by phone or on social networks, 29% cited cooking, 28% said DIY and gardening, next came reading with 19%, music 18% and sports 14%. In reality, 56% of French people practice physical activity or sport every day. That's twice as much as before the confinement. In addition, 7 out of 10 French people follow the news more than usual. The survey concludes that the French are generally experiencing the confinement period well. 3/4, that's 75%, do not feel depressed. A majority, 57%, do not feel anxious or stressed.
Riviera Radio, sports news. That's good news, thank you, Sarah. Beer sales are going to the roof, though. I'll tell you more about that later. Football, the former England and Spurs striker Jimmy Greaves is being treated in hospital for an unspecified illness. The 80-year-old scored 44 goals for England in 57 games, as well as a club record 220 league goals for Spurs. He also had spells at West Ham and Chelsea. Greaves suffered a severe stroke in 2015 and has had other health complications in recent years. Formula One, the Canadian Grand Prix, has become the 9th race of the season to be postponed because of the coronavirus pandemic. The race was due to be held on the 14th of June, but the organisers say that won't be possible because of the length of time it takes to set up the track. Attempts will be made to find a slot for the race sometime later in the year. Cricket, if you're being starved of your favourite sports, then the BBC's Test Match Special is inviting you to relive one of the greatest Test matches of all time from last summer's Ashes. The BBC will rerun the Ashes Test from Headingley in its entirety, during which Ben Stokes made an incredible rearguard century to save the game and the series for England. Coverage will start today and run until Sunday. You could have it on in the garden, just pretend that it's just normal reality. And in rugby union, the British and Irish Lions coach Warren Gatland has suggested that there should be a one-off decider with New Zealand ahead of next summer's tour of South Africa. The Lions and the All Blacks drew their three test series in 2017, and Gatland says a fourth test could help the sports generate revenue after the coronavirus crisis. Rugby across the world is currently on hold because of the pandemic.
The Marine Weather Forecast, brought to you by Oyster Yachts. Be safe on the seas with Oyster Yachts.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Almarazim and the Vaar, the general situation, high pressure, 1,025 millibars, stationary over the region. Winds are variable, force 1 to 3, the sea is calm, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,025 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, clear skies, force 2 to 3, variable winds, calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are northeasterly, force 2 to 4, the sea is slight, visibility is good, barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,024 millibars, and the outlook for Thursday, clear skies, force 2 to 3, variable winds, calm seas, and good visibility.
The Marine Weather Forecast, brought to you by Oyster Yachts. Crafted by British boat builders since 1973, the best ocean-going sailing yachts in the world. The world is your oyster. Make Oyster your world. OysterYachts.com.
Riviera Radio. Weather.
Clear skies once again with light southerly winds today. Temperatures 19 to 21 degrees this afternoon. Overnight lows 12 degrees on the coast and 8 degrees inland with clear skies. Thursday and Friday, more of the same. Yes, please. Highs of 18 to 21 degrees. Finally, the closure of restaurants and the retreats by humans indoors is having an effect on the eating habits and behaviour of rats, according to experts. Late last month, the French Quarter in New Orleans had swarms of rats wandering its famous streets. Not long after the coronavirus closed bars and restaurants in the Louisiana city, rats were coming out of hiding. More rodents were being spotted, comes as no surprise to the renowned urban rodentologist. That's a new word to me, Robert Corrigan. When you have a colony of rats on a block that's been depending on tourists littering and lots of rubbish being put out at night, it could be DC, it could be New York, any place where rats have been depending on easy handouts and that disappears, they don't know what to do. A bit like the rest of us. As Claudia Riegel with the New Orleans Pest Control Board says, these rats are hungry. Humans around the world are changing their behaviour due to the threat of coronavirus pandemic. In some places, quarantine means rubbish the rats depend on is no longer available, and so they also adapt. Dr. Corrigan, who has an office in Lower Manhattan, says he's had messages from friends in the city who've seen rats in new areas and at odd hours for the usually nocturnal animals. Quite a lot on Wall Street anyway, aren't there? Others haven't seen any change in their local rat habits. Colonies might feed on household waste, of which there is still plenty, and not restaurant rubbish. In the UK, the National Pest Technicians Association warned this month the closure of schools, pubs, restaurants, hotels, tourist attractions and other public places to enforce social distancing will have unintended consequences. And don't get me started on seagulls. The amount of rubbish bags I've seen absolutely ripped to bits over the past few days. With the seagulls having a good feast, too countless to mention.